Although it has been suggested in some circles that the power of white evangelicals is on the decline in the U.S., some are saying that a movement known as the New Apostolic Reformation might have a major influence on the 2024 election. André Gagné is the chair of the Department of Theological Studies at Concordia University in Montreal, Canada. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg, who began by asking him if it was still true, as many commentators have said before, that right-wing evangelicals will vote for the most conservative candidate regardless of whether they think that person is a good Christian.
Yes, exactly. I just came out with a book called American Evangelicals for Trump, Dominion, Spiritual Warfare, and the End Times. And it's about that, exactly. This, what we call or what we used to call the Christian right or the religious right in America that have been around for quite some time, since the 80s, the moral majority. But now we have a resurgence, at least since 2016, of these conservative Christians that decided to cast their ballot for Donald Trump. And you're absolutely right in saying that for them, it's about who Trump is, despite the fact that he is not necessarily in his actions. He doesn't necessarily reflect what would people understand to be necessarily Christian virtues, per se. But in 2016, they voted for him at 81%. So 81% of white evangelicals voted for Trump. And when he went for re-election in 2020, the exit polls, the percentage of white evangelicals was between 76 and 81%. And of course, he lost. But now he's on his road to returning in 2024. We'll see what happens. But they're still strongly behind him. And they vote for Trump because, you know, there's an idea behind their support of Trump. Many of them believe that God has chosen Trump in this moment to bring America back to God and bring America back to its Judeo-Christian foundations. And they see in Trump a kind of a strong man that will facilitate that for them. Because if you remember, during his first presidential mandate, he actually fulfilled his promises towards evangelicals. He appointed three conservative judges on the Supreme Court. He also appointed over 300 federal judges across the country that also were conservative.
Although a lot of that was done under Reagan and Bush.
Yeah, but he actually approved many of those during his own mandate, because they were up for new appointments, new renewals, and he was pretty much involved in that. You remember also the famous move of the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. That was a major accomplishment, at least for evangelicals that have a particular view of the place of Israel in the end times before the return of Jesus Christ on earth to establish his kingdom. So for them, Trump is the one that's going to defend their values and respond to the grievances that they have been having for quite some time.
It's interesting on the Israel situation. Even Trump said at one point that he didn't think Netanyahu was really interested in peace. And he was kind of pissed off because of all he'd done for him.
Yeah, exactly. And it's quite incredible that even at the time when Trump was around, that Netanyahu had kind of embraced the rhetoric that was used towards Trump. A lot of evangelicals were saying that Trump was this kind of new Cyrus figure, this King Cyrus, the Persian king that is described in the Bible in Isaiah chapter 45, that Trump was a new Cyrus, a kind of new messianic figure. And Netanyahu used that same kind of reference to describe Trump and saying, like, Trump is in the lineage of the great Cyrus, the Persian king. So it's interesting now, like what you say, everything that Trump has done for Netanyahu, his perspective on the situation now is interesting.
Are the people you're talking about, the evangelicals, would you say that this is part of the what they call the Christian identity movement, or is that really a sub-faction?
That would be a bit different than the Christian identity movement. Mm-hmm. In fact, in my book, I focus not on all evangelicals, because we can, the term evangelical is a very broad term to describe many different types of traditions. I focus more on the evangelicals that seem to be close to political power with Trump at the time, what I call neo-charismatic Pentecostal. They are a subset of evangelicals that focus more on their belief in what they call the gifts of the Spirit. Now, you find this in the New Testament. You find this in the Bible. It's this supernatural abilities that God would give Christians so that Christians would be empowered to build his church and proclaim the gospel message. Things like speaking in tongues, for example, healing, prophecy, miracles. So neo-charismatic Pentecostals embrace that. If you remember during the Trump years, there was this woman called Paula White Payne, who was Trump's spiritual advisor. And she is part of that kind of stream of evangelicals that we call neo-charismatic Pentecostals. If you remember, in many of the meetings that Trump attended, some political rallies, for example, the person that came on stage at first, even before Trump entered, was Paula White Payne. And often she engaged in prayer for Trump, for the presidency. So these are the kind of actors that I kind of explore in my book and try to help people understand who these people are, what they believe, and how are they motivated? What is their political theology? What is their sense of the involvement of Christians in the political arena in America?
And how do they get along with the other parts of the Republican coalition? You know, you have your traditional conservatives who just want to have lower taxes and really don't care about guns and gays and school prayer and all that. And is there some kind of tension there?
Of course there is. A lot of them, they would label these people as rhinos, if you remember, Republicans in name only. Because for them, it's about the Judeo-Christian values. It's about bringing America back to God. They embrace a political theology of power that I describe in my book, which is called dominion theology. Essentially, dominion theology is this theocratic idea that Christians are called by God to exercise dominion in every aspect of society. And by doing so, in order to do so, in fact, they need to take control of cultural, social, and political institutions. So this is why for them being in politics, for example, is very, very important, because if they're in politics, they can influence policies and make sure that they align those policies to their beliefs or to their specific worldview. Now, this political theology that I unpack in my book, I try to explain that this is, of course, an idea. This is a theological idea that they read in the Bible. So when they read, for example, a specific text from the book of Genesis, one of the texts that deals with the creation story. In Genesis 1, chapter 1, verses 26 to 28, God mandates humankind to exercise dominion over creation.
But not domination.
That's it. That's it. It's not domination over other individuals. It's how you manage creation. But they take that for themselves. They say, oh, this dominion mandate is for Christians. Christians are to exercise authority. So you see,
nothing ecumenical there.
There's not much ecumenism. There's not much of a ecumenical spirit there, for sure. But you know, this is a political idea. Like, this is kind of their political philosophy or political theology. But the thing is, that's very abstract. How do you get there, like, from this idea to concrete action? They came up eventually, and this has been reported often in the media. You hear that sometimes. You hear this idea of the Seven Mountain Mandate, which is a kind of a marketing mobilization strategy that was popularized by this Christian entrepreneur by the name of Lance Wallnau, who wrote a book on Trump in 2016 called God's Chaos Candidate. So Wallnau didn't invent this concept, but he popularized it. It's this idea that society is represented through various spheres of culture. Like, for example, they represent this as mountains. Like the mountain of government or business or education or the family or media, arts and entertainment, and religion. And for them, Christians need to occupy the high places of those cultural spheres in order to influence and change the culture of those spheres. So when you do that, when you're at the top echelons of those spheres, you will bring about dominion. You will bring about what they call the kingdom of God on earth. So essentially, that's their political strategy. And Trump is a tool to get there, you see, to make that happen, because he listens to them. You see, Trump and them had this kind of transactional relationship during his mandate. Like, he listened to their grievances and he tried to meet and satisfy his promises towards them, but he relied on their support, on their voting support. So that's how it works. And people that are in their way, people that don't agree with that kind of mandate, are often sidetracked or sidelined, or they are delegitimized as political adversaries, where they start using language of spiritual warfare, demonizing political adversaries and enemies as being influenced under the powers of evil forces. So that's how it plays out. It's a kind of rhetorical strategy to polarize people and force people to choose a candidate.
It sounds like the kind of political strategy you're talking about was something that conservatives have been doing for decades, trying to take over school boards and city councils.
Yeah.
I imagine there's some infighting there, because not everyone's an evangelical. Some people are just sort of part of that cultural milieu where they hate Democrats, let's say. They're not particularly religious. They're not what you referred to previously as rhinos so much as not right-wing evangelicals.
Yeah, no, and that's it. You see, this is where the problems come up, because, you know, what happens to those that don't share this kind of world? You see, what happens to, you know, an American pluralistic society where you have people from different faiths or non-faith? What happens when or if this kind of theocratic idea of political theology instills itself into American politics? What happens to these
people? Does it turn into the Handmaid's Tale?
That's it. Some people are very, very aware, you know, worried about these types of possible outcomes, you see? So this is why 2024, like many other elections, but 2024 is very crucial in terms of democracy, because these people don't have the same view of democracy. They don't share the pluralistic, liberal, democratic values that many people in the U.S. adhere to.
Is Trump going to have a problem? Probably not. But is he going to have a problem with the abortion issue, because he's trying to kind of stake out a more moderate position by saying he doesn't really want a federal ban on abortion?
Yeah. Up to a certain extent, you know, is he going to have a problem? Maybe not. You know, if you remember the Reagan years, you see, you remember the moral majority had Reagan elected in the 80s. So they managed to get their evangelical that they had voted for, Jimmy Carter. They weren't satisfied with what he was doing, so they got Reagan on board.
Although that was a very low voter turnout, if I recall, for Reagan.
But no, in fact, what happened is that at that time, this is when people started realizing that, oh my goodness, evangelicals are an important voting bloc, and we have to tap into those evangelicals. We have to cater. We have to make sure that we get their attention and that we get their vote. But what's important to note is that when the moral majority got Reagan in, they had high hopes for Reagan. They thought that, you know, maybe he would get rid of Roe versus Wade. He would, you know, he would push back against certain things, communism and so on. And he didn't do much of what they expected, but they still supported him. For them, it was better than someone else. So in that case, I think this is what we're going to see with Trump. In some instances, Trump will, of course, maybe not all the time, on this issue, for example, where he kind of backpedaled up to a certain extent in terms of abortion in some aspects of it, they might not agree with that. And they might try to push and push and push, but he's going to be in the White House and he's going to want to do whatever he wants to do. So, and they're still going to be very happy if it's him, for those that do support him.
That's Concordia University professor Andre Gagne speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on January 31st, 2024.